I didn't know it at the time. I feel like that now about them too. So I'm like, cool. This is something in my life that like brings me closer to something holy.
Welcome to Telling Stories. You just heard the voice of Ariel Mahir talking about not stories, but in fact, dildos. You'll discover in this episode why the two may be more linked than you at first thought.
Filled with a blood fueled by the living, breathing imagination of its beholder. It was alive, and I was alive in a way I had never ever experienced before.
In this episode, we're talking time travel, the beauties of language, how religion can shape stories, and so much more. I hope that you enjoy. And we're going to dive straight in. Here's Ari describing the joy and the beauty in making small things, and this idea that nothing need ever be finished.
I really like making small things, short things. I find the lowest stakes, and to just practice letting myself experiment, practice just like finishing something. And just that day, it happened.
What happens when I can't find what I'm looking for?
I couldn't find something, and I know what it does.
A physical and emotional tornado explodes in the house.
And so I was like, I just the energy shit, the whole thing, you know? And I was like, maybe she'll let me interview her about this.
Part of my thing of being in a house with somebody else is like, she's going to have the answer. She's going to know where this is because she lives here too, and she knows where things are.
It definitely has some like on the nose sound design. So there's that, which I don't know if I'd make those sound design choices now, but whatever. It was just kind of something that it like to complete something. And then on top of that, externalizing your anxiety is something that I do because I want relief from it so badly.
You're so good at finding things. I just feel like you can help me find things.
I don't, though. Most of the time, I don't find it. Most of the time, you find it.
After you're like, and it's so interesting that she's like, you create a tornado in the house because that's clearly what's happening inside me. You can infer that from the piece. If I were to remake that, I would love to go deeper on why and how.
When I see you stressed, I get stressed. I don't know how to control it.
Maybe that's my next one. And that's another thing. Like, I never feel like anything has to be done. That helps me with the low stakes. Like, I never have to feel like this is the piece. I can make that piece again and again and again, and I should.
I just feel like you helped me find myself, so you'll help me find everything else.
My name is Ariel Mejia. I also go by Ari. I am a Chicago-based audio producer. And what makes a good story for me is when you are so tapped in to the story that you're living in a liminal space of being inside your body and potentially out in theirs, in the listeners. So you're like straddling multiple worlds at once. That's what I think makes a good story. That's why I wanted to make audio stories, is the way that we straddle worlds while we listen. You are listening to somebody tell you any kind of story, and you're right there in it with them, be it their sound design, the tone of the person's voice, the emotion, the world of sound within there, like all of that is what pulls like your soul out and into it.
Your piece, sorry, Chasing Purple, which I loved, it felt like kind of going back in a time machine with you to, you know, when you were younger. And I felt that I'd kind of gone on this journey with you. And then I was, I don't know, almost living your life, but in my own head. And I wondered about that kind of process of making different identities and different worlds, because you kind of mention about your identity in that piece as being very DIY and something that you're constantly trying to create and construct.
Becoming a sexual person for me meant do-it-yourself sex. Honestly, the sculpting of everything about me felt very DIY. My presentation in the world has always felt so watery. I'm half Mexican, half Jewish. So growing up, At least 9 times a day, people were asking me what I was.
If you don't mind me asking, look at all those freckles and that big hair.
So exotic. Are you Asian?
Your eyes.
You must be half black. Wow, I've never seen hair like this.
What are you?
What's your background?
What?
If you don't mind me asking, what are you?
What are you? Ugh. I used to make up my ethnic background in response to the questions.
Half Greek, half Colombian.
Half Portuguese, half Irish.
Half Japanese and half Brazilian. That one was my favorite.
I felt my sexual identity, like the way I was perceived racially, was malleable. The mystery of my race made the mystery of sexual identity very tangible to me. And queerness was a place I could settle into, like a worn couch.
Thank you so much for listening and also saying that you went in a time machine. Like, clearly I'm using archival, I'm talking about the past, so like that makes sense. But also, time travel is something that I spend a lot of time thinking about as like an audio producer, but also somebody that just is doing a lot of, I'm doing a lot of like healing work in my life as a person. And I just feel like time really bends. I feel like that all the time. Like the future and the present and the past are a simultaneous experience in our bodies, and also in that, like, I feel like time is a construction. So there's that. And I feel like part of the healing element of making audio work and telling audio stories, the personal ones like that, is to inhabit these old selves and our present self to work it out, to tell the story, to heal that part of ourselves. I mean, and especially in that, it's, you know, it's a story about how can I stop dissociating when I'm having sex? And how did I start doing that? And like, the more deep I can get into those parts of myself, I feel like you're thinking about what that means for you, you know? I hope for that.
We had been kissing and dry humping on the floor when the idea came to both of us at the same time. What about a carrot? Long enough, not too thin. It made sense to our developing brains. She ran to the fridge and came back to report she hadn't found a carrot, but instead a very big zucchini. And I mean massive. It was probably like 10 inches long and 6 inches around. But we were both like, sure. We got back to kissing and took off our clothes and then proceeded to shove the zucchini inside my vagina. I don't remember even knowing about the existence of lube at this time, so we for sure didn't have any of that. Needless to say, felt terrible. Like my skin was being ripped apart like fabric, my vaginal wall screaming the sound of tearing cotton.
When you're creating, how do you kind of think about that structure in your head before it becomes the audio story?
I kind of like let, as I was making that, also lead where the story went. Like I could feel myself ask new questions coming up and new feelings coming up and inquiries to investigate as it went on. I started with a really long meandering writing and this archival tape from when I was, I think, like 15 or 16 with my high school girlfriend. I think it just like kind of unfolds from there. And also, like, I do want to note, like with that piece, I had like 8 months to work on that. That took a lot of time, and I had the, I don't want to say luxury because it, but it didn't feel like a luxury. It was actually really, really scary and hard. But that I was working with producers and collaborators, also my friends, that I also want to note, making work like that was like really nurtured in the safety of the community in which I was making it. And it also just started like if at the lead, the host lead, and that was like, we were just like talking about dildos and riffing.
Would potentially be like your cervix. I just didn't think it made sense. I don't know, whatever.
Also, I do. I am a fan. So, like, kind of like, what does that mean? And going from there. So it was a pretty organic process, to say the least.
One of the things that I was. when I was listening to it was that, you know, like what Phoebe said about kind of traveling back in time, so much of it was because it was like the writing was sort of told from the perspective of you at that age, and obviously it helped having the archive tape and that sort of thing, but what really stood out to me is like your observation and kind of analysis skills. So I wondered if you could talk about that a little.
Well, I feel like there's a couple things about that. One, I what my friend calls like a therapy junkie. I've been in therapy for a long time. I really like therapy. I really like that kind of internal investigation. Ultimately, this comes back to like how we connect with ourselves. Are we able to do that difficult, painful work of connecting with ourselves? Because ultimately, you know, to do that with ourselves means we have that ability with others. The curiosity and desire for awareness is a painful process, but the rewards are so great. And that's something that feels really important to me.
Is that what a story is? Is it almost a process of healing, or is it opening up a door to discover pain? Or
I kind of hope so. I mean, there is something healing through telling stories this way. I do want to say it is a particular kind of storytelling that like is not everyone's bag. I mean, after I made Chasing Purple, I was like, oh my God, I don't even know if this is the, will I ever do something like this again? This was so hard. And also I listen and I kind of cringe because it's so raw. Like it's raw, you know? And I even was like, oh my God, should I put this on my website? People I work. And then I'm like, yes, because this is also like a life philosophy that I like want in my dreamscape of a world. Like we're talking about love and sex, romance, pain and trauma freely and openly, because that's how it heals.
It was a complete blind exploration, so compulsory. Like I was watching myself react and breathe and move, hovering over my body, not inside it. When having sex, it was like I was part alive, part ghost. And those two parts of myself were in conversation with each other, not with the person I was having sex with. Ghost. What are you doing? I don't know what I'm doing, clearly. But I think it feels good. You think? I don't know. I've never done this. Okay, so I have to interject here because this is a lie. My high school girlfriend was not my first kiss or even my first sexy experience. I had a neighbor who was a couple years older than me, and we would experiment with each other's bodies in his bedroom closet. The first time I did this, I was around 7 years old, but I struggle to acknowledge this time in my own sexual history, maybe because this was the experience that began my ghost relationship, and I feel ashamed. I feel shame that I was so young, shame that I enjoyed it while I felt conflicted about it, shame that I continue to pretend it never happened, even as I make this story. Well, now it's here. I've done it.
Can I ask you a question about texture? Because your pieces are always so rich and layered, and they're filled with movement. So can you just talk about texture when you're telling stories, and what is it and how do you create it and why is it important?
Totally. The first thing when I got into audio too, and like really getting excited about sound design and sound design conceptually. So for example, like that piece, Finding What's Lost, there's a lot of literal sound design there for sure, right? But as I kind of went on and got deeper in, I would be like, what does it sound like when you're looking at a version of yourself you don't recognize? What does that sound like? And I would think, well, and I'm kind of referring to the, I'm referring to this piece I made called Sand, which is on my SoundCloud if you heard it. Because to me, that was like a really deeply textured piece that I'm so, so, so into. When you say texture, that's what I'm thinking. And so I'm like, well, you know, when you're looking through like, I think it's called water glass, and it's like, you can't really see what's on the other side. And then I'm like, but you can see shapes. What does that sound like? And so sound conceptually is kind of what I'm thinking about and what I'm asking myself and what I'm searching for and what I'm playing with. Even there's a part in Chasing Purple when I'm talking about like fade, like water, salt and water. And what I did is I like poured salt into like a metal bowl, but I like ran it through a few plugins and layered it a couple times. And it's just like, these are the things that I'm just like, layers of sound as I put them in the workstation, in the software, and also how you experience layers and like visualizing that, like tapestries, like sewing. I often think a lot about cloth and about textiles. Sewing and textiles is like a marriage to of being in this space. I love to think about it like that. It really helps me. And I do like kind of philosophically believe if I'm thinking and feeling something, I'm like, this is what the listener does. I mean, I don't know that, but that's like, there's a trust that happens for me in building, in like, in the layering and in the building of the sound.
All right, what you were saying earlier about fabric and kind of stitching and using that to help with your storytelling, that kind of made me think of your opening, especially to Chasing Purple, where you have the repetition of words and you're saying, you know, dear future. Anyway, there's a whole flow of language. And A, it kind of builds this repetition, but there's also something in a few of your pieces that's very sort of ritual, sacred, spiritual almost. And I'm wondering if that is that something that you're thinking about through stories, these kind of almost spiritual places and how we can use objects as symbols to get there.
Yeah, I love that idea. Rituals are so important to us as humans, like routine, repetition, but also like I am someone on a spiritual journey, and that I'm figuring out what that really looks like for me. I was raised Jewish, I was raised Jewish. My mom is Jewish. My dad is Mexican. You heard this in the story, but like being biracial and being in a Jewish community that was really white was really hard. Also that Judaism just never really resonated as a whole, as a practice, but there are, like any religion, I feel like rituals are paramount. There's in particular in Judaism, there's like incredible ritual around food. And again, I don't know other religions, but I can just only speak to what I know, like holidays where like foods are associated with memories and feelings, and you eat something to like aliven that memory, or yeah, like objects in particular, not like idols, because that's like very anti-Jewish, but whatever. I'm taking what I like and leaving the rest. And I love the ritualistic elements that Judaism taught me. And so I want to treat the practice of audio, of art making and audio making as its own kind of ritual. And it is that for me. I'd like to make more work around that. I really would. Also to, yeah, that's it. Yeah, so there. I mean, again, it's like a very open book, and I don't really know. And part of, you know, I kind of was like, wow, this dildo is totally a spiritual object. I didn't know it at the time. I feel like that now about them too. So I'm like, cool. This is something in my life that like brings me closer to something holy.
I never ever forgot the first time I had a sex where I didn't leave my body, where my ghost stayed put. They were a singer in a punk band called Easy Prey. And the first thing I knew was that I liked their smell, their bright eyes, and their dark hair. And their dick was purple. When they lovingly fucked me with it, it felt like an electric shock. Their dick was a toaster and my body the bathtub. All of a sudden, there was a sanctity to this sex. In the way you honor a ritual with intention and beauty, a respect that meant my sensual and sexual experience were in tandem as my pleasure barometer. This purple dick was filled with a blood fueled by the living, breathing imagination of its beholder. It was alive, and
I was alive in a way I had never ever experienced before. And this was so fucking hot.
When you have sex with people who are gender nonconforming, and you're using toys, or not even gender nonconforming, like gender, when you're having sex, it's like, what is gender? In a way, even when it is two cisgendered people, like whatever, like bodies and feelings and parts are just that. At least that's part of what a goal in my sexual experiences to begin with, no matter what the gender of the other person is or how I'm feeling about my gender in that moment.
When I think of queer sex, I think of like figuring out all the different kinds of sex that exist.
I feel like a whole like universe opened up to me. Of like what sex could be.
It allowed me to like redefine what sex was.
I feel like having sex with people has taught me a lot about myself and specifically about my gender.
I feel like more comfortable in my own body to like be many parts of it.
I think it was you that screamed come on my dick.
I literally in my head remember thinking like, I cannot believe that this is happening to me.
Dildos as objects do become so fueled with, they're like extensions of body parts, you know? I mean, that's also what they are too. So I was just like trying to articulate that. And
underwear, and it's like my dick, you know what I mean? Like it's totally not a dildo. It's like
this tool kind of helps us to like bridge this imaginary gap.
It's important to me that like anyone who wants to say whatever they have like is a dick can say that. And that can be fun.
I can't ever go back. I can't ever have sex any other way. A sex that is simultaneously feeling so good, physically and spiritually. Like water filling the sidewalk cracks. My ghost submerged back into my body and filled the places where I wasn't.
Part of the imagination zone of this piece was to, how can you feel what I feel in this object that is very real to the person using it and the person experiencing it? And also these notions of real, natural, these are constructions. There's a hierarchy in what we call natural, and that's also bullshit. So these are all the elements that I was calling upon in that little section. Thank you for asking.
It's almost like the dildo is just a whole metaphor for a story in itself, because it's like an extension of the person, you know, using it, and it's received by somebody else. And yeah, and it just this very kind of this sensuousness. I think I've come to a whole new realization about storytelling through this conversation.
Cool.
And in some ways it's even cooler, because it's like, it's powerful enough where you don't even need the physical stimulation to derive pleasure.
From Cross Dreaming by Manal Hajratwala. You do not know me if you craze my saber and my light, but not the wound I guard. One accuses another of everything but love. One demands cameras, safety whistles, glue to hold herself together against the brutal gaze. We only need these awkward straps, heat-slick dildos, cutchy mirrors, concentric abstract, aura of this crescent moon sweeping our bodies with cool white, reflective and deflected light. Because of what we've lost or left, because the language is disaster, because our species has forgotten acute angles, triple dream projected, inner, outer, secret, on empty, aching temple walls. Afterward, the residue. What isn't conscious throngs towards the surface. 10,000 joy and sorrow fishes crashing into air.
That was the wonderful Ari. Do go and explore their work. There's a whole delightful treasure trove to explore on Ari's SoundCloud. And your storytelling challenge is to
make a piece that you feel is like making a quilt. There's texture, there's sewing. Like your question, Redzi, like, what does texture mean to you? Show me and show us what that means.
So my piece was a little rambly, but I made it straight after the conversation with Ari. And I felt inspired to say whatever was coming out of my mouth. So I guess from the rambles, I could work this piece up again into something more considered. And I think that's something that James T. Green and Ariana Martinez talk about in their interviews. This idea that, you know, your stories are works in progress. You can collect notes and voice memos on your phone. And yeah, everything is a stepping stone to something else. Lots of the personal sort of love stories that are on the radio, people whisper at the beginning if it's, you know, something important. So I'm just sort of trying out how could I tell this sort of love, sort of non-love story. Whispering feels a bit odd. I'm just going to talk maybe slightly softer. Quilts. If I could give you a quilt with a secret message woven into its edge, what would it say? Quilts go on beds. Quilts go on beds, and lots of my stories about you have started from bed. Often I'll be sitting in bed recording a letter to you, or I'll be thinking about how you used to struggle sleeping, connected with beds, and how we would lie for hours stroking your head till you fell asleep. And now I can picture the cot-like bed. It had fluorescent stars along the sides, and I don't think I like that room because I feel like you just didn't... You didn't like it, or you never slept in it. In the morning, you'd always be in Fred's bed or Mum and Dad's bed, never in your own bed. So now maybe that room's got bad vibes for me. And now the picture that used to hang above your bed of the kind of creepy-looking young kid with the book and the dog looking intently at the book and the kid teaching the dog to read is above my bed. So there's that kind of connection with your room and my room. So, if I could embroider a message on a quilt to you, because I like that idea, a secret message, what would I say? That's what I was thinking about in the shower today. What would it be? Language is so hard because I could say so many things, but I think often I don't think too much about the meaning of the words. For example, I could write that I miss you, and I could embroider it onto the edge. But I think those are just words that I've learnt. And if I think about their meaning, I'm not sure I do miss you that much. I do, I think, now that I've said that, I don't like saying that I don't miss you. Then I could write that I love you, but, not but, I do love you, but love, I think, surely you have to know somebody well to love them, and you have to have strong memories. And because I have strong memories of you, but they slip every day a bit. So that no longer feels specific enough. It's like, can you love what you don't know anymore? Yeah, you can, but it's different love and it's complicated. I don't think my embroidery skills are good enough to scrawl all of that kind of grief love over your quilt, so not that. Then I thought a name, your name, but it's sort of meaningless, you know your name, my name, then maybe whenever you're wearing the quilt, you think of me, and you'd think, oh, I want to see Phoebe. But then if you don't want to see me, you don't want my name on the quilt. So maybe just a quilt. No words, because they carry so much, not only baggage, but meaning that is often not there, meaning that then the other person infers. So no meaning, or at least no language meaning. I will just buy you a quilt. It will be a nice one, from John Lewis quality, and you will, it will keep you, it will keep you warm. If I can't do this story without getting emotional, then it means I do love you. Maybe I'll just write that. I think I'll just write "I love you" on it. And then even if you didn't know who it was from, my mum's in the room next door, so I'm going to be a bit quiet because she gets upset if I'm making these emotional stories. This is the whispering, back to the whispering. Maybe just two stitches. Maybe just two stitches, one for me and one for you. And no words. Thank you for listening to Telling Stories. Please do send us your challenges to tellingstoriespod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @stories_pod. Thanks for listening.